Hello, this is The Link Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com in channel pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out, www.linuxshow.com, for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
And we're back.
This is the Tuesday night edition of The Linux Show. Again, broadcasting our regular Tuesday night show here in July 2002. What are we, the 23rd of July already? Man, the time is just flying away for this entire year. But we keep on coming back week after week, bringing these shows to you. We got the entire crew plus here tonight. We've got Doc on a cell phone somewhere on a highway in Southern California.
You know where there's a scene in, I forget the, oh, it's that first funny movie with, Leslie Nielsen, you know, where he says everything reminds me of her, and he goes past this nuclear power plant that looks like a couple of ditties. I don't know if you know it. It's the San Onofre nuclear power plant. I'm going past that right now. And if you're a surfer, it's also known as Trestle. It's the Trestle surf spot, which is where the Nixon West Coast White House used to be. All together, all at once. I just passed that.
And plus, you got the Marines right there too.
I got the Marines off to my left. I'm very well protected by whatever that huge base is. Camp Pendleton.
Absolutely.
If you're old enough to remember the song Surfer Joe, you'll know what that's about.
Absolutely. Been by it a number of times. Also out on the coast, we've got Arnie Floney. So how are you doing tonight, Arnie?
Oh, I'm just fine. It's a beautiful day here, and Doc should have taken the inland route, and he could have cut off some time, but it's not as interesting as going by the...
I would have missed my daughter. She's in Irvine, so I had to...
So it's not as interesting as going by Camp Pendleton there and in the old Western White House and stuff. The traffic's much worse that way, though.
Yeah, it's actually pretty clear right now, finally.
You're lucky.
Yep, out on the other coast, we've got Russ Pavlicek. How are you doing tonight, Russ?
Oh, I'm hanging in.
Good.
And in keeping with the Tuesday tradition, we've had thunderstorms. We can't seem to get any rain the rest of the time, but when the show comes on, it brings its own thunderstorms with
it.
Yeah,
we just seem to bring all kinds of good luck to the D.C. area, don't we?
Well, I'll tell you, it's still dry enough out here that maybe we should go to a five-night-a-week schedule or something like this.
You mean rainmakers, huh?
That's it.
We'll have to ask for government funding on that one, I'm sure. And, of course, Kevin and I are here in the broadcast studios in Aurora, Illinois, bringing you the Tuesday night edition of The Linux Show. We're not going to waste any time. We're going to jump right into the first segment because we've got an extra guest tonight. And the story that we're going to jump right into is one of the highlighted items that we posted on the website tonight in terms of how real is real. And this is something that really, not using the overuse the word real, but it has really, really piqued my interest because I have a history with the company, the real servers throughout the years of Kevin and my history of being in the ISP business. We've got a real history with these folks. So I'm very psyched into this news. I just want to know how true it actually is. So I went to the horse's mouth. I don't know if I want to use that term to describe Eric Raymond, but how you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm fine. I'm sitting here in a hotel lobby in San Francisco, actually, 3,000 miles from my usual stomping grounds.
Yeah, and you were participating in this news release, press conference.
I was present at the news conference. I gave interviews afterwards, and I helped I help the Real Networks people with their licensing strategy and launch planning.
Okay, can you give us, in your interpretation, what the short-term and long-term plans really are going to be for, what are we going to see in terms of, I know the press release said that we're going to see client stuff pretty quickly, like within 90 days, but it's going to be year-end before we see any server product opened up. Is that a realistic course that they're on? Eric? Hello, Eric.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
No, I can pick up where he left off if you want. I don't know if that's... Because I've been paying some attention to it, too, but any one of us could speak.
Why don't you go ahead and jump in there, and as soon as Eric calls back, we'll let him break in.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I wasn't there. I was invited to come. I have been in touch with people inside Real over the years. There is a very, very strong Linux contingency inside Real. And I wrote about this in Linux Journal today, and toward the end of the piece, if you take a look at it, it's on the Linux Journal site, probably one of the top two or three pieces. It hasn't scrolled down yet. I haven't seen it. I just know it's there. I speculated that what's happened there is very much like what has happened at IBM and at HP and at other large companies, which is that the level of Linux development inside and its effectiveness has gradually taken over the development team, so that what appears to be a high-level strategy is actually also an acquiescence to an internal fact inside the company, which is that there is widespread Linux adoption and open source works, and, you know, there it is. You know, and suddenly a lot of engineers are saying, hey, look, you know, let's open source this and this and this and this, and it's going to make a great deal of sense. Now, Bruce, what I wanted to ask Eric about was where he stood on what Bruce Perens wrote. Bruce Perens wrote a piece that was quoted by Dan Gilmore in the Mercury News. I quoted it. I pointed to it. A number of others.
Your phone system dropped me.
Excuse me?
Well, your phone system dropped me.
I'll have to take your word for it, Eric, but I'm glad you're back.
He's back.
Okay, what was the last sentence I succeeded in uttering?
I can't remember, but what we'll do is Doc has been talking about it a little bit, and he would like to start out. Well, I don't want to put you words in your mouth, Doc. You were halfway through your question. Why don't you rephrase your question?
Oh, no, actually, no, it's just that there are two things. One, I've been in touch with people inside Real over the years, and there's a lot of Linux development that's been going on there for a long time, but it's just never seen the light of day. And this looked to me a bit like sooner or later open source had to bubble to the surface, much like it did at IBM and at other companies, and this happened here also. That's just an observation. I was wondering what your take on that was. The other was how you differed it. Go for it. What? Are we still on?
Okay. My car is here. I will say that is very consistent with hearing. Take this out and take that. Okay. I am now going to my limo. I will continue talking and answering questions while I deal with this. It is possible this may not actually interrupt the show. Okay. So what Doc conjectured about there being a lot of Linux interest and Linux development there, which is bubbling to the surface, is completely consistent with both what I heard both from Rob Lanfear, who's one of the developers there, and from Rob Glazer himself, who's the CEO and founder of the company. They seem to be very turned on to the whole Linux, whole open source thing. And in fact, there was street noises. Let's get inside the car here so the decibel level will drop. Yeah. In fact, during his talk, Rob Glazer said that one of the reasons that they're able to get four times the performance from their new product that Microsoft can get from its streaming server is, he says, we're using a better operating system, which is, of course, Linux. So they're very pro-Linux over there. They seem genuinely excited about the open source thing. They also have good pragmatic business reasons for doing this, which Rob Glazer was very candid about. He said what finally pushed them over the edge was when they went to Nokia And Nokia said, oh, yes, we'd like to work with you. Now, here are 40 devices that, that the client needs to be ported to. And they ran the numbers and said, we don't have the engineers to do this. We need to get help.
But wait a minute. How is porting to 40 devices going to be done when Real is one of the people that basically is keeping, that has this, you know, digital rights management? How does digital rights management fit in with all this? Because Real, well, that's what I'm thinking. It doesn't.
It doesn't. And, in fact, that question came up at the press conference. A reporter asked, what does this have to do with DRM? And Rob Glaser said from the stage, officially, this has nothing to do with DRM. This is all about infrastructure. This is all about passing bits around. People who implement servers and players on top of this can play whatever DRM games they like. This technology doesn't involve that or prejudge it.
But Real has never been able to save a stream. I mean, the Real client that I've always used, it basically sucks. I mean, it doesn't do much of anything you want to do.
The thing is that all past experience with their clients goes out the window with this. Am I wrong about that, Eric?
Well, they're still holding the codecs proprietary, so it isn't going to be possible to
but
write an open source.
Now, here's an interesting thing. They're holding their own codecs proprietary, but they'll play other people's specs.
That's right. And, in fact, one of the things that I know their techies are excited about is putting Ogg Vorbis over the top of this software.
Well, I'm unimpressed because if they're holding their own codecs proprietary, then that means they're not really open sourcing.
Well, they're not open sourcing the codecs.
This is what we knew all along, is that Real networks, although they might want to talk a big open source thing, they're really not. They don't have it at heart.
Well, I don't think the release of RTFP is insignificant.
Well, I mean, you know, as long as the real player, you know, the real streaming that I always get is always the worst quality and the slowest and.
But that's if you only use their codecs. I mean, here's the question for me: if they're open sourcing the player,
no, they're not open sourcing the player. I said at the beginning, all they're open sourcing is the bit pump that moves stuff between the player and the server. They're all open sourcing both ends of that. But the rest of the player is still closed.
Yeah, well, I'm not. If I'm not going to use Real, I'm not going to use the Real player. I'm not going to use the client. Period.
Wait, here's a question. I mean, when I've corresponded with these people before, I told them, you know, because they were soliciting my input, and I told them if you're not opening the codecs, you're not being Real, literally.
My attitude was I will help them get this RTFP release out there because that's code that people can use to write Real applications. And my hope is that they'll have sufficiently good benefits from that and a good experience with it so that in 6 months we can have the conversation about the codecs.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things you said, and I actually quoted you on, I read and liked it, was, you know, one fight at a time. And I think that's a good attitude. They've come a long way.
And being honest with you, I really am not sure if their codec is even relevant anymore.
It's certainly not technically a very good one.
Well, with the success of Ogg, I don't know if it's even a relevant codec anymore.
In fact, I got the same feeling from talking to one of the developers that was there. Apparently, they don't think their own codec is interesting anymore. All the buzz I heard was about Ogg Vorbis.
That's the question. My feeling has been for a long time that sooner or later, Ogg is the only one that's qualified to become Real infrastructure because nobody owns it, and
right.
You know it is unencumbered by patents or by IP issues, and sooner or later that's just going to prevail. I mean, I've been told by the Apple people that, you know, their codec with QuickTime is just full of other people's IP, which is one of the problems that they've had with open sourcing it. They just aren't in a position to do it. And of course, we know MP3 has a frown offer, whatever it's pronounced. It's public domain. But the interesting thing is, if in the long run you've got something on the source, on the server and the client side, I mean, if the end evolutionary state of this is something that both on the server and the client side is going to run anybody's codec, then Darwinian mechanisms take care of all the other codex, the Nog, in the long run. I think that's what happened.
And you know, I think there are people inside. I think there are people inside real who are hip to that and not very worried about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eric, did you happen to talk to anybody in these conversations over the last couple of months? Did any of this motivation of releasing the bit pump in particular come mm-hmm. from their own interaction with Icecast?
Icecast was never mentioned in any of the conversations
okay.
I had with
I'm surprised. I'm surprised. Okay. I'm curious about that. Okay. Well,
you know, what seems to be...
And let me ask you, Eric, we're both going to be at OSCON tomorrow. We're both going to be seeing Rob Glaser as well. Is that not true?
Yeah, we're having lunch with him, I think.
We're having lunch with him tomorrow. So the conversation is going to continue.
Yeah.
Well, I hope so, because it needs to, because they're falling far, far short of becoming where we want them, we'd like them to be. For one thing, we want digital media to be open technology. And as long as they have a proprietary codec and you know, and they're doing the digital rights thing, that's not gonna happen.
Well,
look, my attitude is any open source release is better than no open source release.
That's true.
And at least it would be, I think it would be very counterproductive and very churlish of the community to reject our DSP just because they don't get the codex.
I'm not saying reject it.
Yeah.
We reject it. We embrace it. But the fact of the matter is we also need to say that, you know, you still need to bring this the codec open too, because...
Well, that's true, but fight nice. Don't sound resentful.
Yeah.
No, that's true. But
again, Arnie, I gotta be honest with you. I think that the codec is irrelevant. I really do.
It's not irrelevant. It does the is when people are broadcasting and webcasting and whatever you want to call it stuff on the internet, and it's not as free as the stuff that's on the air on the radio that I when I click my radio on that I can record. Just by plugging in a tape recorder, I can record that, or plugging my computer's sound card input into the radio. When I can't do that with a webcast, as easy as I can do that with a regular radio, then there's something wrong.
You can do it with MP3 right now, and real is streaming MP3.
Yeah, and that's got nothing to do with the
real, when I use the real client, I can't do it.
Yeah, but the client has nothing to do with the codec.
Right.
Well, anyway, the interesting thing is, I mean, the real client will also play MP3.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And you can't say
that. I don't need the real client to play MP3.
No, absolutely, you do not need the real client.
And I will not use the real client for that.
But real is already streaming both MP3 and its own codec. So it's like, you know, its proprietary codec is just but one of the streams that it's sending.
Yeah.
So... You know, I don't think it has the chokehold that it used to have.
No, I don't think I agree with that.
And therefore, I mean, my guess is the reason it's not open is it because of a variety of internal politics and, you know, God knows. I mean, a number of people have told me that the patent issues with codecs are just enormous. I mean, they're just anybody. There are 1,000 patents where somebody could walk up and say, no, that's real close to what I said. And there's legal departments of companies like that are going to say no to all kinds of shit for entirely pro forma reasons. And in the meantime, if you've got players and, you know, we've got sources and clients that are sending multiple streams, does it really matter anymore? You know, I don't know. I tend to think it doesn't. A few days ago, I thought it did, but right now I don't. And I'm with Eric on that. I think these guys have come a long way, and it's a bit of a sex change for them, and I'm willing to cut them the benefit of the doubt while they're working on it.
Yeah, let us not blame these people. That would be a bad reaction.
Yeah. So Eric, one question. Did you read Bruce Perrin's piece, and where do you stand with what he said?
No, I didn't read Bruce Perrin's piece.
Okay. Yeah, that's a moot point then.
Well, Doc, did you read Bruce Perrin's piece so that people have an idea of what you're even referring to?
Oh, no. What Bruce did was very kind to Real, and he said he was there, and he said that he basically pulled it, you know, he teased apart the various issues and said this is open, this isn't, and they need to do these, and they, you know, basically it's not all that different than what we're saying now, except it's much more detailed about the particulars. I mean, he went into, you know, what they were doing and what they weren't. Basically, that's all there is to it. But he did say they went part way. Basically, that was his point. This is part way there. And bravo for as far as they've come, but a conditional okay. But it wasn't, it was very level, very, it was not a, it was a very cautious and, but more or less straightforward piece on the technical issue. But it's pointed to I pointed to it, and Dan Gilmore pointed to it, and and Andrew Orlowski, writing in the Register, also pointed to it. So, basically, the piece that you wrote is a source it's a working document for right now, anyway, for the press guys writing about it. But again, I think it's very early in this thing, really early.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very early.
This is the first weekend, so.
Yeah, and you know, kudos to Glazer. I mean, the guy's saying, hey, look, we're looking for input here, you know? I mean, he didn't say this is a final license. It's even more open in many ways than what Apple went through. Apple went out there and put a pretty nasty license out there, got smacked around, and then came back and changed it. But
I'll say this. One of the things I like about dealing with the Real Networks people is I gave them advice that they actually took.
God bless them,
I've been in situations where, some company would want me to, would tell me they wanted me to assist them with this and anoint what they were doing, and I'd give them a lot of advice, and they'd sort of listen and nod their heads and then do what they were planning to do anyway. The Real Networks people weren't like that. They actually listened very seriously to my advice, and they took a lot of it.
You know, what it reminds me of, the Real people writing to me have, said like, hey, look, you beat the crap out of us publicly, which I have a number of times, because I've hated their website, I've hated their marketing, I've hated how hostile they've been. I actually paid for their darn player a number of times, uselessly. It was like Netscape, you get the same damn thing whether you paid for it or not, and a horrible service and so forth. But in many ways, what's happened with a company like this, and even to a lesser extent, I think with a company like IBM, is it's sort of like, they imagine a plane that stalls. Once the plane is stalled and it's in a dive, you need a different strategy for flying it. You really do. And all of a sudden, it's sort of like, we got to accelerate into a dive before we can regain control of this thing. And we're going to have to trust the air and the pilots and a few other things. I mean, I think that's sort of what we're at here. And it really has worked for IBM, and it's working for HP. It's going to work for Sun, in spite of themselves. It's working for Apple in a huge way, and it's going to work for Real.
I hope so.
And 3 or 4 years from now, it's going to work for Microsoft too. It's inevitable. It's just inevitable. So I'm actually quite optimistic about it, and I'm willing to cut them an awful lot of slack on, for having, reached the stall speed that they needed to in order to rethink everything.
Well, I don't know if it was that they've reached the stall speed. I think this is probably a matter of survival at this point.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's interesting to me that the press, as always, played it as a, and I think Rob Glazer also feels it this way. I mean, he's an old Microsoft guy, had Microsoft on the brain for a long time. He'll probably never get it off. But this is a smart way to compete. And it's also a smart way to completely change the marketplace. I mean, that's what you do. I mean, you don't compete straight up with guys like Microsoft. You change the marketplace out from under them. And this does it. You know,
yeah, what about the Windows Media Player? Are they going to have some entanglements there, Eric?
They said some things about support for Windows Media Streaming that I didn't understand because I'm not familiar with this kind of software, so I can't parse all the jargon. But apparently they've got some kind of pass-through for that format that isn't actually a codec.
Oh, I see. It's just a bitstream. A bitstream is a bitstream.
Yeah.
Well, they reverse engineered the codec, and they've got something that manages to act like the Windows Media Player codec at both ends. So they can transmit it, and Windows Media Player client can parse it and play it, and
well, makes
at
sense.
The same time, their own client will do the same thing. I guess that's what the deal is.
Yeah, well, this kind of thing happens all the time. A perfect example, go to the Linux Show website, and you will see on the Linux Show website there are noted on the site real streams, and we really don't push real streams.
We just push MPEG-3.
We push a bit stream that the real player can handle and work around it that way. And they've done basically the same thing.
Oh, no, but they're able to deliver, according to the press release I've read, they're able to deliver Windows Media content. Of course, like it's like Doc said, they're just pumping it out.
Yep. It's really not that tough to reverse engineer the stuff out.
No, they're not decoding it. They're just providing it, passing it to a decoder. Whatever. That's neat, though. I mean, you know, I hope they can continue doing that. But I hope that also this capability of doing that also maybe gets them thinking that, gee, maybe they need to be more open themselves.
Well, Doc and Eric, do us a favor. When you have lunch with Glazer tomorrow,
right?
Invite him on the show next week.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And let him state his own case. And, you know, some good...
And invite him to sponsor the show as well.
Sure.
Why not?
We better get that real streaming, real stream going there, Jeff.
Well, I think it'd be an interesting thing to follow. I mean, quite aside from whatever. I mean, there's no, what's the harm in asking? You know, I want to hit him up for Geekpack anyway. You know, I mean, why not?
Well, absolutely, you guys got to.
Freaking billionaire! Let's hit him for some money, for God's sake.
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea on that point, even alone. But very interesting situation. I've actually been wondering when something like this was going to happen to real. I've really sort of thought it was an inevitability that it had to probably happen sooner or later. But why don't we put this down for now and run around the panel real quick. Eric, if you want to hang in there, go ahead. If not, have a good flight, and we'll probably talk to you tomorrow or the next day. But let's go around the panel and pick up on our hot stories of the week and before we completely run out of time. So, Russ, how are you doing, and what's your hot story of the week?
I'm doing okay. The hot story that for me is one that I don't know how hot it'll be for other people, but it just happened that up on the InfoWorld website, I have a column on Palladium, Microsoft's security initiative. And I just came across over on Slashdot a link to Security Focus Online, which has an article called High Flying Schmidt. And this is by George Smith. It discusses how the ex-Microsoft security, whatever he was, chief security officer at Microsoft, former, is running around now as vice chairman of the president's Critical Infrastructure Protection Board, and is making some really interesting claims about how the power grid could fail catastrophically by 2005, et cetera, because everything's going to be connected to the Internet. And Mr. Smith, I think, pretty rightly goes through and debunks a lot of what's going on inside this person's rhetoric. But the thing that screamed out to me about this is that this has to be something that Microsoft likes, even though he's not supposed to be working for Microsoft anymore. This seems to me to play very much into the hands of their Palladium play, and that is that security from pacemakers to PCs is going to be a real problem to find here inside the next few years. And so the natural conclusion is we need something to make it all more secure, and therefore the Palladium initiative, which will only allow trusted code, quote-unquote, to be used, seems to make a lot of sense. So I'm very, I don't know, I'm very put off about what this man is doing here, Mr. Schmidt, running around as now as part of a government effort, but he just seems to be laying the groundwork for Palladium push, in my own cynical mind. But that's my biggest one. A couple small ones, including stories out on out on NewScientist.com, and where was this thing? Covered. It was covered by Linux Today a couple days ago, talking about how China is apparently working on a Windows 98 compatible operating system to take the place, apparently, of their current Windows stuff. And there is an increasing amount of conjecture that Linux may be the base of this, Linux and Wine, which would be a very interesting beast if that really is the case.
That's the rumor I've heard.
Yeah, so that'll be... That'll be very interesting to see. The other thing that I don't know whether Doc's going to talk about this is how .NET seems to be getting more and more press in the open source world, both with Mono, which is Miguel de Caza's .NET framework that's open source, but also now the announcement that I guess is coming tomorrow from Covalent about something to do with Apache delivering some form of .NET services. So that's going to be an interesting ball to watch as to where that goes. And I don't know, are you going to cover that at all, Doc?
No, I'm not. I think Miguel's going to be down at this thing also, so I'll probably talk to him about it. As a matter of fact, I think their PR people are trying to line something up. But I haven't been covering it that closely. But it's an interesting thing. I'll be curious to know where it's going. But you know, I also believe that Microsoft's going through a kind of a discovery process in the course of .NET development, which is going a lot slower than they anticipated. And I think they're getting some useful help, at least at the in co-development and also the PR level from Miguel and the people at Symbian, and so we'll see. I don't know. I haven't been covering it closely. I imagine I'll find out more.
Okay. And the last thing is just a quick reminder, because frankly I haven't seen much about it, but that international slash dot meetup day that some people have put together is apparently on Thursday, just 2 days away. And there are pointers to local meetup locations at slashdot.meetup.com. For people who are interested in meeting other slash daughters in their vicinity.
Yeah, I should add that Meetup itself is running on Linux, and I met the guy who created it in New York a couple of weeks ago, and he's a great guy, and it's a great little piece of software, and it's a great idea. So, and you can set up a Meetup for anything. I mean, we could have. Well, in fact, I want to do something with GeekPack and AOTC using Meetup. I think it's democracy at work.
Huh.
So
we'll have to see what we can do on that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is a great idea.
Yeah,
and I met him with the E the People thing. E the People, which is as it sounds, E and then I think it's E and then dash T H E P E O P L E .org is a grassroots democracy effort. Also running on Linux, so very thick with Linux, good people, very nonpartisan, nice stuff.
Okay, Arnie, do you have some stories of the week for us?
Yeah, I got a couple really interesting ones. One is the UK government is making some rumblings about supporting open source, and this is something that's happening kind of like many places. China's been doing it The Mexican government's toyed with it. Some of the education institutions. But this is the government in general, the central government. And we know that Queen's website was at one time run on open source Apache Linux. Now it's a Windows server, but that's because basically they changed their hosting company. But it would be nice to see the government officially just basically saying, you know, we're sick and tired of the extortion from Microsoft, and this is cheaper and better anyway. And UK seems to be making rumblings that direction. The other interesting story I found was something on Slashdot, and I'm trying to get back to it here, and that is someone is doing an open source cookbook, and this looks really good. I love food, and
food loves you.
I recommend eating food. I rather eat food than any other substance, I'll tell you right now. And this is an open source GFDL licensed book in PDF or ASCII form. Oh, they're also publishing a Word form for you guys who run Windows. And basically this is a food for coding. And open source is going to be done open source. Their target is 40 to 50 pages and as many recipes that fits in that. And they're asking for submissions, and this is on Slashdot. And I'll tell you right now, I plan on downloading them if they need, you know, maybe buying a copy of the book. It sounds really great.
You're on food right now too, aren't you, Arnie?
Oh yeah, I'm hungry. I mean, it's like just before dinner time here.
Yep.
So this one just jumped right out at me.
Kevin, do you have any new releases or hot stories of the week?
Oh yeah, there's Beta 1 of Mandrake 9 is out, which, amongst other goodies, has GNOME 2.0 and is the first distribution to come out with GCC 3.1. So, of course, it'll be binary incompatible with most commercial software.
Oh, Woody's out.
That's true.
Yep. Speaking of product releases, although it's not a new product release, I saw Chris DeBona on TV last night doing tech.
Where?
Chris DeBona on TV last night as a guest on the live Monday night Tech TV live news segment that they have, at least in Chicago. It's live at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And he was doing a demonstration of the new old GNOME product release. I don't remember which version it was that he was talking about. But really what he was just trying to do is show people a desktop with a good browser and Star Office. So he was just, in general, doing a little PR for a lot of different products. Making use of this GNOME box. So it was very cool seeing him on TV. Looked very sharp. But any more products, Kevin?
That's the big one this week.
Okay. Doc, do you have any hot stories for the week?
Our landmark Linux-based internet radio station, first one on the air ever, first commercial station on the air ever, KPIG, operated by our friend Bill Goldsmith, ceased webcasting and raised quite a ruckus doing that. So if we have time, we can talk about that, but if not, it certainly caused...
No, let's go ahead and take a few minutes. Cameron is on. Hi, Cameron.
Hey, what's up?
But he'll wait. Let's take a moment and talk about it because it's an important story. In fact, we've talked about it a lot today, not on the show but off the broadcast. And there is apparently, if you're following the news threads rumbling through DC on the issue of CARP. They're starting to take on a bit of a backlash in terms of things aren't working out the way they had originally intended them to work out. I don't think the Librarian of Congress realized that quite so many companies would actually go to their lawyers and have their lawyers draft up bankruptcy papers. And I think this has been a real shocker to the people in D.C., in particular the Librarian of Congress. I'm not so sure if he really had, of course he's got, I suppose, the power to do anything he wants, but if you really read the specifics on the way this particular CARP was initially set up, it may very well have been that he really didn't have much choice in terms of adopting what he did, because he was only given very limited information. The amount of testimony was very one-sided, and the example that everything that was built upon by the RIAA was based upon the Broadcast.com business model. And, of course, Broadcast.com doesn't exist anymore.
And it wasn't just the Broadcast.com business model. It was the deal that Broadcast.com was prepared to make that, as we found out from the email that Mark Cuban, who ran Broadcast.com and is now the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, the very famous and familiar owner of the Dallas Mavericks, he wrote a letter to Kurt Hansen of RAIN, the radio, I forget what the whole thing is, but it's at KurtHansen.com. He's sort of taking the lead in advocating internet radio. But Mark Cuban said, hey, look, we were literally doing two things. One was we were coming up with a regime that was going to put the small webcaster out of business by charging on a per-stream basis. And at the same time, we were developing a multi-streaming technology that would allow us to be charged for only one stream, which never happened, by the way. And in other words, he was scamming. He was busy scamming the regulatory regime that he imagined was going to come out of this. He was working at, he was working a deal, and once he was gone and Yahoo took it over, they didn't even know what they had, but that's what the CARP based its decision on, that this notion of a willing seller and a willing buyer that was burned into the DMCA in the first place, which is ludicrous. I mean, the DMCA, if you go back and read what it said and burned into copyright law, talks about what would have happened in a market between a willing buyer and a willing seller if one had ever existed, not imagining that market conditions would ever allow that to take place. And in fact, it is happening. It's happening with Pink K Pig, and it's happening with Radio Paradise and some of the other internet webcasters who are getting paid by directly by their listeners on more or less the public television model. It's not efficient, and it's not everybody paying, but there is a revenue base. There really is a business that's happening there that neither the DMCA imagined, nor Mark Cuban, nor the CARP, nor anybody else. And I think what's also happened is that the Librarian of Congress, and probably not a few Congress people, are realizing that among their constituents are going to be some very public bankruptcies of internet radio pioneers. And it's not going to look good.
No, it's not. I tell you, just the email generated alone, just because we have taken the archives offline, really shows me a lot. I tell you. And my response to everyone who sends me an email complaining about the disappearance of the archives is, if you want to see those 5 years of archives come back, you got to write your congressman and get off your butt and do something about killing CARP. And I think the combined effort of the enormous breadth of webcasters that's out there, no one has a clue of how many there really are, but in the United States, there's got to be at least 15,000 webcasters out there.
Well, yeah, well, Live 365 claims 40,000 all by itself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so when you've got that kind of breadth, if everybody in that kind of model, if everybody only has 50 listeners that are, you know, consistent listeners, you know, we're still talking about hundreds of thousands of people that are making use of web-based broadcast. And it is not the broadcast model. It is the narrowcast model, and the RIAA has got to get their damn nose out of it, or they're going to kill it. And, well, you know really more what's going on over at KPEG than I do, Doc, and we know that there's things happening in the background that
right.
may shed results in the very, very near future.
Yeah, they're, you know, we know that Bill Goldsmith, who is the only, really the only figure, the only human being who has not only developed something like the accounting system that constantly keeps records of what's being played on the radio. Done it all on Linux, by the way, and with, like, I guess, PHP and MySQL and some other stuff like that. But, I mean, Bill has almost single-handedly created the technology that allows a webcasting business to happen. And at the same time, you know, runs one of the very few webcasting stations that actually has an income. And he says he's in negotiations right now. He's not saying any more than that. And he also says he's optimistic. And, well, that makes me optimistic, too. So, you know, I'm hoping that what's going on here is that all of the parties are looking at this and saying, well, now that a disaster is finally happening and some serious pioneering stations are going off the air, we're going to have to sit down and talk turkey and come up with something that doesn't result in the death of an entire infant industry and oh, by the way, something that really sells a lot of records too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I think that's likely to happen. That's my own personal betting line without really knowing anything right now.
Yeah, well, the swell is starting. Seriously, it is starting to happen. I'm getting plenty of email in that direction. Bottom line, let's look at two sides of the webcasting model. First, let's look at the extreme commercial end where you've got a person like Wild Bill at Radio Paradise who is one of the few financially successful webcasters and who has taken the time and made the effort and spent the money to develop the technology required to live up to the letter of the law of tracking all the BMI ASCAP nonsense that they make webcasters do. They make webcasters track far more information than they require of over-the-air broadcasters, the level of detail. But
and mostly because they can.
Yes.
I mean, in a certain way, the RIAA's model is an optimistic one in respect to the medium. It's saying, well, you can do a lot more digitally than you can with analog, and so we want you to do that.
Yeah, but
and Bill has done it.
Yeah, and the point is, though, Doc, is that here you've got a guy who actually spent the money, spent the time, made the effort to create the technology to be able to do this, and he is throwing up his hand and saying, I can no longer do this profitably.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already paid for the tool. So
right.
How in the world can that, we'll take Live 365 number, did you say was 40,000?
Yeah.
We'll throw another 15,000 on top of that to be fairly conservative. Okay, in the United States, you're probably looking at a minimum of 50,000 broadcasters that can't afford to stay in business because they don't have the tool to track
right.
that information, and they don't have
and,
the money.
And there's something else we can't too, and won't, which is a more interesting thing, and that is the big broadcasters. The Clear Channels of the world, is, you know, these are cheapskates. These guys don't want one more dime of overhead. And they're, you know, they're yanking their streams. You know, they're not going to participate in this. It, you know, it looks like cost to them. It doesn't look like, you know, like anything else. And I think that's exactly who the RIAA expected to stay alive. And they're bailed, too. It's just nobody misses them.
Yep. So, the good news is that there's a definite ray of light on the horizon when we're coming to CARP. It's looking awful gloomy for a couple weeks there, but there is a glimmer of hope. I'd really like to get a little bit more input from Paul on this from the not-for-profit side of the broadcasting picture.
Yeah.
Maybe we can do that between now and next week and talk about it more. But why don't we take a short break and come back with segment number two of the Linux Show, and let's talk a little bit about Fat Linux. So everybody hang in there for a few minutes. We're going to take a very short break. We'll be right back.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make the Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out sourceforge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
We're back. And there wasn't enough time to go to the bathroom, Kevin. Jeez. This is the Tuesday night edition of the Linux Show for the 23rd of July. I do have that right, I think. 2002. We are up to segment number two. Doc, you were saying in the break, what about an aurora that might be happening tonight?
Yeah, just take a look at spaceweather.com. I think it's space-weather. There was a big burst of solar wind that came off the sun a couple days ago. It's arriving at Earth today. And what it does is it pushes the halo of the aurora borealis off of the North Pole and down over the states. It's done this before, and it's likely to do it tonight.
Actually, what happens is it actually generates the aurora itself.
Yeah.
It's the particles.
Right. It exaggerates the aurora, but it also pushes it around. So.
And naturally, we have a full moon tonight.
That's going to dim it a little bit. However, it's still you know, interesting. So take a look outside tonight. You might be surprised.
Yeah, I'll check it out about 2 a.m. when the moon is gone.
It'll be full moon tonight, so it's not going to be gone at all, probably. So, but if it's bright enough, it'll still be visible.
Well, the moon will still set.
I have actually been in places where I swear, and people look at me like I'm crazy when I say this, but I've been way up north on a couple of occasions where I swear I could hear the damn aurora.
Yeah, you can hear it.
Just crackling in the sky.
That's right. You can hear it.
I've only seen it from airplanes flying to the UK or something. It's amazing, actually. You sit on the left side of the plane in the winter and look out. Just amazing.
Yep.
Let's get fat, guys.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's get to segment number two and talk about Fat Linux. Okay. We've got on the phone with us tonight the founder of Fat Linux, longtime friend of us here at the Linux Show, Cameron Cooper. I'm trying to think back really quickly. When we had Cameron on the show the first time, I believe it was the summer of 1999. Can't say for a fact, but I think it was.
Yeah, that's about when it was.
When you were how old? 14, 15 years old?
I think I was 15. Yeah, I must have been.
That is a long time ago, though.
It is a long time ago.
And I've got to compliment you, Cameron, on your on just one thing. I mean, you're a kid. I mean, you know, you're much older than you were when you started, but still, from my perspective, you're a kid. And you've survived. You're still there.
Yeah.
I mean, Corel's gone.
Thank God.
I'll be on the Upper Valley Park.
So that's Doc parking his car, I believe.
Well, freaking out, you like.
But
yeah, I got a lot of stuff to get out of his car though. So where do I do?
Right here.
Okay, let me.
We're witnessing Doc parking his car live on the Linux show.
I was trying to get it off mic.
But so, Cameron, why don't you give everybody a really quick, brief history of Fat Linux, why you did it,
all right,
and then bring us up to date on version 4.0 and what's new with your new version.
Brief history, all right. Well, of course, as every project does, Fat Linux came out of a need. I mean, when I started Linux, it was because I actually had I saved up enough money to buy a computer to dedicate to Linux. Previously, my hard drive wasn't big enough. I didn't have the know-how to repartition and all that great stuff. So once I got into Linux, I realized that it would be kind of possible to run Linux off of a fat partition. And so that's kind of where I got started on that idea. And I initially started off using a UMS-DOS file system, but that's kind of slow and bulky. So over the years, it's grown over to a loop partition and all that good stuff. And 3 years later, we're at Fat Linux 4.0, and still kind of doing the regular updates and doing things like Debian. I think that's a really cool thing to include. I think it's a really nice desktop system.
Well, let's hit on a couple of sort of highlights on the history.
All right.
As you've gone through the development, first of all, I know primarily you've done all the work.
Right.
But you've had a few people help out from time to time.
Right.
Through the history of the project, how many people do you think have actually worked on?
Well, have actually worked on Fat Linux, the operating system itself.
Yeah.
You remember the first time I was on the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was on the show with me, but I had kind of a partner.
Yeah.
Supposed to be helping me out.
Yeah.
But it was actually just kind of like him supporting me on this project. He was supposed to be like a partner, but then we parted ways because I realized he actually didn't do a single thing. So I'm not sure who has actually, other than me, contributed to the development.
Wow, so you've done every single line of code?
I think so.
Well, that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. I didn't realize it was that far skewed. I have checked from time to time when you have released new versions.
Right.
I'll run over to sites like download.com.
Yeah.
And I'll, check to see in terms of how you're doing, in terms of your ratings of popularity in Linux download. And there's been a couple of times where I've seen you, I've seen Fat Linux appear in the top 4 or 5 of Linux downloads. Do you have any clue of how many total downloads you've actually experienced since the beginning?
I don't know if I could give you an exact number, but I can try. If you look at download.com, if you look at their numbers, you'll see a few hundred thousand. I think they've changed the numbers since then, and they've cleared their counter. But I remember at one point seeing a number over 100,000 just from download.com alone.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how accurate their numbers are.
Well, I saw the number at download.com at one time as high as 225,000. That's the highest I
right.
saw.
I'd really love to believe that number, but it's such a large download that I don't know if I could believe that many people have actually successfully downloaded it.
I don't know. I've downloaded it like 6 times. So it can be done.
Yeah.
So.
I suppose it's possible. I could give you an exact number. I try to keep a log on the website from people clicking, but those have been cleared over the years too. I suppose I could say that there have been over 100,000 actual Fat Linux users, which kind of makes me proud to have started it.
One of the larger distributions there, Cameron.
It's hard for me to believe because, it's just my own creation. And all the other guys seem so huge and professional projects. I don't know.
Well, one of the guys in the chat room is teasing, like, oh, he's waiting for the next Corel release. You know, do you realize that you've been around longer than Corel and have existed and have survived where Corel, the great big company Corel, hasn't even survived?
I guess they couldn't do my software as well as I could.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they just couldn't do it right. I mean, you know, the only one who's got the product that works and still works.
Apparently they tried to take the Linux One approach to my software. I'm not sure.
Well, they are the Linux One, approach.
Now, what are the latest updates?
The latest updates, I put on kernel, 2.4.18, X3.4 is on there, and the desktop environment. Those are the largest, most notable updates. And things like Kudzu, I think, are great for people that are getting started in Linux, because before that wasn't a part of Fat Linux, which now that it's on there, it makes things a lot easier for them to get started, because when you're first starting with Linux, you have no idea about kernel modules or anything like that.
Okay. And if you don't want to tell me this, you don't have to, because I'm really sensitive about people asking me things like this that are potentially income-related. But how many people have actually bought CDs from you?
How many people have bought CDs from me? You mean the Fat Linux 4.0 or overall?
Overall.
I don't know if I could give you an exact number. I could say it's in the thousands, though.
Really?
Right.
Cool!
That makes me happy.
Yeah, so this is like paying your way to college?
It's working on it. Yeah.
That's very cool.
If it could do that for me, that'd be wonderful. And if not, well, then I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, if you're selling a couple of thousand,
right,
then for somebody your age, that's a full-time job.
Yeah.
By the way, it's inexpensive, too. It's not a lot of money.
Right. I don't feel right charging a lot of money for that kind of thing. And I want people to be able to use it, most of all.
But it's a great little distribution for people who really want to just get a taste. And it really is. It's a great distribution. And I actually, although I shouldn't say this, I very recently downloaded it into my daughter's computer and wrecked her computer. But it had nothing to do with that Linux. It was my own doing. So, well, what?
Cameron, I have a question for you from the chat room.
All right.
FAT32 can only have one user, root. So how is that treated with Fat Linux?
That's not necessarily true. It only comes with one initial user, just root to get started. But you can add new users once you're in there.
There you go.
Well, is that what they were asking me?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, that's what Stock and the IRC was asking.
All right. Again, I wanted it to be as easy as you can use from the get-go. I wanted to have a simple screen for installing it, and then as easy as possible to get started using it. And I didn't want to have too many complications on the install for people that are just getting into Linux.
But it does do a more advanced install, right?
Right. Well, actually, not on the install. The install, it's basically, it's a live file system that it's extracted just to a folder on your C drive or whatever. So you can start using it right away, and then it'll configure it a little bit once it gets booted up. But on the install screen, there's not much there.
No, it doesn't need to be much there.
I wanted to make it as least intimidating as possible. Because I remember when I first installed Linux, I thought I was going to completely destroy my computer. And I wanted to kind of eliminate those fears.
So what's in your future, Cameron?
In my future, fall, going down to Ohio State.
Oh, that's what I was about to ask. I said, by now, you've got to be starting college this fall.
Yeah, Ohio State, they start pretty late. Late September is when I'm actually going down. Going to major in computer engineering. I feel like I've done a lot in the software part of it. I want to kind of move on to the hardware, so I can start actually creating some cool stuff.
Yeah, but I'm gonna just take Doc's phone and mute it out so I don't have to listen to that anymore.
But, oh no.
Oh, Doc, are you listening?
I'm listening, sure.
Okay. All right. Then
I'm actually in my hotel room now.
Okay. Then I won't mute you.
Standing by the window.
I won't mute you out. So you're in your room, huh?
Yeah.
So I've experienced all of Southern California, a parking garage, and now a hotel room with Doc Searles. What a way to spend an afternoon.
You need to be actually handing my absolutely ugly, beat up old Subaru over to valet parking. And it's about the ugliest thing you've ever seen.
I'll take your word for it. So, yeah. Cameron, come on. I know you're saying you're tired of software development.
I'm not tired of software
development. Come on. I mean, this is a dissertation already.
Well, basically, I'm not going to major in computer science. I wouldn't learn some more software developing because I figure at college it's going to be quite an investment. I should learn some hardware while I'm there. Stuff I can't necessarily learn on my own.
I suppose that's true, but I tell you, the amount of work you've already done on that.
Oh, I don't plan on quitting software development.
It's definitely, without question, there's enough work there to cop yourself a master's dissertation for sure, if not giving yourself halfway to a PhD. I'm not kidding you. You put in enough hours to really qualify for that level of an academic work. So take advantage of the fact.
I suppose I should.
You spent that time. Very cool. What besides college? Anything that we should be looking for out of Cameron? Are you going to just keep on working at FAT? Have you lined up a job with somebody for the fall, or what is going on?
I haven't gotten any jobs lined up. I suppose FAT. I hope that FAT can kind of just keep me going without having to get a job. I like working on it, and I'd rather just be able to do that because, you know, during school it's going to be kind of tough to have a job, file Linux, and, of course, learning.
Not freshman year. Freshman year is a cakewalk.
Well, I don't really have too much else lined up for me right now. I'm going to try to keep it simple just to get started. I don't want to overwhelm myself at first.
Yeah.
Keep FAT going, too. I mean, FAT's a neat thing.
I definitely plan on it. It's been much fun.
Yeah. You ought to make the effort to apply for a grant with Linux International.
With Linux International? I'd like to do that.
Yep. Yeah, you ought to take the effort.
I wonder how I'd go about that.
I don't know. You just made a sale. Really? Someone just placed an order.
Nice. That'll go out tomorrow for it.
And he asked if this is from Scotter, and he says, I just placed my order. Will you autograph it before it gets mailed?
Will I autograph it? All right, I'll autograph it. Who's it for?
Scotter,
all right.
Yeah, well, let's see.
Hey, any orders you just get during the next couple hours, just send them out with an autograph.
I'll send them out with an autograph, and I'll be like, thanks for listening to Linux Show.
That's right.
Or something. Hopefully they were listening.
Okay. And I tell you, everybody who's out there, if you've got a friend or a granny who you're trying to get them convinced that Linux is the way to take them, go ahead and download or buy a CD from Cameron and give them the taste. It's real easy to install. It's a real cakewalk. And as long as you don't break the computer like I did, it's real easy to install. And for those of your friends or associates who are absolutely paranoid about their valuable Windows, this allows them to do it without doing any modification to the system at all, so they can still keep all of their heroin.
Is there a package list, Cameron?
Is there a package list? Not really.
Okay, but you do run Zimmy and go
right.
And what are your basic system requirements?
System requirements. Quite a large hard drive. Well, for what seems like an application, it's a very large hard drive requirement. It needs a gigabyte because there's a lot of file system in there. It's a 900 megabyte file system, which can be resized because some people will express that seems kind of small. But I didn't want to have anything too big. But obviously 900 meg isn't small. So you need about a gig of hard drive space free, and you can extend the size if you want. Basic Pentium class processor, nothing more. Basically, basic Linux requirements just for the operating system to run. On top of that, gig requirement for hard drive. Those are the basic system requirements.
Okay, that's good.
Let's see, one other question. What's the package management?
RPM.
RPM.
It's based on Red Hat.
I thought it was based on Mandrake.
Well, it is based on Mandrake.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Well, we are at 10 after the hour, and so we are done for another week. Cameron, you have really got to keep us in the loop of what's going on with your life. And in fact, if you will email me later on, I might have a gig for you. Probably won't pay you much, but I know somebody who's looking for somebody to write some Linux articles so that you might be able to handle that in
Excellent.
Your free time. And have the amount of money they're paying, most of the people that I know won't take that low of a level. And not that I'm saying you don't deserve
money, I'm not talking about it. I'll write something.
You're young. You'll work cheaper than I will. But
it's all about the spirit, remember?
That's right. And I'm just too old and lazy. So we're done for this week, folks. We're going to call it a day, call it a week. So on behalf of the entire crew here, Russ and Doc and Arnie and Kevin and myself and both of our guests tonight, Eric Raymond and Cameron Cooper, this has been the Tuesday night edition of The Linux Show for the 23rd of July. Now, before we close, I'm going to thank our sponsors, the people at GA Software, the people at Little Blue Box, www.littlebluebox.com. And next week, although I've been saying next week, our sponsor that has the Super DSL offer is going to actually come out of the closet and offer business class DSL for, like, I think it's $75 or $80 for a business class DSL. Really cheap, lots of speed, cheap. Ideally,
what bandwidth?
1.5 over 768 for, like, it's like $80. It's with five IP numbers. It's for geeks only, though. There's no support. And that's why it's cheap. It's because you're only getting Tier 2 support. The service is designed for people who are like admins who can set their clients up and make a profit on it. But we'll talk more about that next week, because we actually are going to make a little money off of each sign-up that they get. So hopefully people will buy up that.
Wow.
But we'll
find where is it offered?
Pardon?
Where is it offered?
Nationally.
Wow.
It's part of the old Rhythms Network. I know a little background behind this is that when Rhythms went into Chapter 11 receivership, there was big, complicated sort of plan that was developed that would allow access to all this old Rhythms infrastructure. And so this group of ISPs went in together and agreed to commit to a certain minimum level of the Rhythms equipment. And so literally, it's in like 10,000 central offices across the U.S., and it's very inexpensive.
I wonder if it's in mine. Of course, I've got a pretty good service, but it's cost me more than that.
Well, yeah, and it's five IPs, guaranteed bandwidth, 1.5 over 768 for like $80 a month.
I've got 768 up and down.
They got me, I'll tell you that. I need the IPs.
Yeah, well, you know what? We'll wait till next week so I can actually quote the right price and stuff. Because I really don't have their stuff in front of me, so I'm going to embarrass myself if I'm not careful. So we'll wait till next week to actually come out of the closet with that announcement. And other than that, I got to express a little disappointment. I really need you people who are out there listening, and Arnie, could you type this into the IRC room too? People have got to step up. We got $47,000 worth of pledges back 3 or 4 months ago when we were first getting the AOTC and GeekPack organized. Now that we are legal and we can accept the donations, we're waiting for money, folks. Nobody's donating money. well, I shouldn't say nobody, we've gotten a few thousand dollars, but we really need people to take some grassroots effort, get off your rear ends, tell 10 of your friends, email them tonight, aotc.info and geekpack.com. Get your butts to the website, download a donation form, and write a check. If you want to see political change, like the kind of stuff that's being worked on for CARP, and you want to see that extended into other areas, like the Towson Dingle Bill, which is potentially fatal for the Internet, you people have got to get off your butts and get your friends to donate money. Big time. Big time. So, if you've got a blog, blog us. Tell your friends. But I think that's enough. I won't preach anymore until next week. This has been the Tuesday night edition of the Linux Show for July the 23rd, 2002. We'll see everybody next week. Good night, everybody. We're out
of here. You need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? No, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor.